Hello everyone and welcome to Team Early Childhood Podcast. This week we've got a fantastic speaker who is delighted to join us, and that is the fantastic Ruth Swales.
Hi Aaron.
How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. Are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. Thank you for coming to join us, Ruth.
Pleasure.
So before I go into explaining what the week's going to be about, Ruth, would you like to tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, certainly. I am currently working as a school improvement advisor and an early years specialist consultant. So I work all over the country. I work with local authorities, multi-academy trusts, teaching schools alliances. I do school visits, nursery visits, and lots and lots and lots of training. So that's what I do now.
That's great. And everybody seems to know who you are, Ruth, so it's brilliant. Ruth's focus this week, everybody, is going to be a discussion around continuing the passion for early years and primary education. And really, Ruth, that probably is at the heart of what you do, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Really passionate about early years in particular. And when I'm talking about early years, I'm talking about birth to seven, but my experience is right through primary. So I'm very, very passionate about making sure that we don't suddenly stop at the cliff edge and that the learning that we have in early years continues right through primary education and beyond.
I love that. I just love the fact that, you know, early years is at the forefront of what you believe in, but actually even supporting right up to that year six level is great to hear.
Yeah.
So everyone, you all know the structure of how our podcasts work. I'm going to be questioning Ruth on six questions that me and Ruth have devised. And as you know, the questions are planned before the session. Ruth, the six questions, as you know, what I try to do is I ask you a question. Sometimes you will answer them as we go through. I say, well, you know, we've covered question two or question three. So are you ready for the questions then, Ruth?
I think I am. Yes, Aaron. Yeah.
You've already kind of given us an introduction. So this is question number one. You've given us an introduction, but tell us a little bit more about yourself. You know, where did it all start for you?
My interest in teaching in particular in early years started when I left school and I didn't quite know what I wanted to do. I was not really particularly, I wasn't one of these people who sort of knew from the age of five that I wanted to be a teacher. I thought I might want to go into social work. I knew I wanted to do something to help people.
Yeah,
and so I took a year out and I did various jobs. I worked in factories and I worked in supermarkets and shops, and the rest of the time when I wasn't doing that to bring some money in, I did a lot of voluntary work.
Right.
And two of the sort of biggest roles I did, one was at an old people's daycare centre, and another one was with two local women's refuges.
Right.
And I really enjoyed that. And in the women's refuge, I found myself naturally gravitating towards the role of play worker.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you've got a lot of children coming in who are quite traumatised, a big age range, everything from babies right through to teenagers, and they've had quite traumatic experiences. And I used to set up creches and visits to other places and just generally keep the children entertained. And I think it was sort of around about then that I thought, oh, actually, I quite like working with children. And that's when I started to explore the idea of being a teacher. So that's what I did.
Oh, wow. Do you know, I didn't even know that about you, Ruth. So even I'm learning new things about you, which is absolutely great. And isn't it interesting that we gravitate towards, you know, that kind of children and, you know, I think it's really great as well that you started working within a women's refuge. And do you feel that that's kind of held on to the core of what you're about as well, you know, throughout your career?
Absolutely. I most of my career was spent before I became an advisor. I was in primary schools. I never actually worked in an infant school, much to my regret, but I was in primary schools, and I, with just one notable exception, I always worked in areas that were quite challenging in terms of socioeconomic deprivation, and that was a real driving force for me, a feeling that you can make a difference. I grew up in quite a working class community, a former mining community. And I was growing up in the middle of the miners' strike, and a lot of my family's, you know, their work was in the pit. And so I suppose that resonated with me as well. And And I just really wanted to do something that made a difference. And I really felt in the refuge that no matter what you did with the children, it did make a difference. And it wasn't easy always, you know, sometimes there were challenging behaviours, you know, children had experienced trauma and they needed quite specialist support. And I sort of look back now and think I was really finding my way as quite, you know, I was 18 and I was sort of trying to navigate these really tricky situations, but I did. You know, I remember one of the workers at the centre saying, have you ever thought of being a teacher? You're really, really good with the children. And it was like a light bulb moment for me, really. And I think that has driven me ever since.
Well, I've got to say, I can only talk from my own experience, but that has definitely shone through over the past 10 weeks, you know, where you've definitely kind of been the support and the, you know, there's been definitely a gravitational pull, really, of your support and dedication to the sector. So thank you for
doing that. Well, it's been a pleasure. I felt quite helpless when you know, I'm used to being in schools and supporting people, and suddenly you find yourself at home and you think, well, what can I do now?
and it's also like it's quite interesting that, you know, you've continued that support for your, you know, your network as well, and but also opened it up to a new network, you know. I've definitely opened it up to a fantastic network, and that's down to you, so thank you very much.
Pleasure.
So that leads us on to question number two. So what is the most important aspect of early education now at the moment, and what can we do as educators to be able to support it? So what's happening at the moment, and what can educators do to be able to support it?
I mean, I think it doesn't change. What the most important aspect of early education is for me is the child at the heart of it all. That doesn't change no matter what situation you find yourself in. I do think that it's sometimes quite difficult to keep a hold of that. And I say that and I will hold my hands up and say, you know, when I was a head teacher, sometimes it's very easy to forget that, you know, you're talking about individual children because you're being held to account for some quite high level things, you know, some accountability measures, and you do get very into statistics and things like that. And so it's very easy to forget that what you're actually talking about here is children. But I think we need to just hold on to that and remember that we're all about children. It's about making sure that we put that at the heart of everything, that every decision we make, we look through the lens of what's in this for children, what difference will it make? And that's something that I talk about a lot on my training. Well, you know, when you're doing something, ask yourself, what's in this for the child? And if it's not making things better for the child, why am I doing it? So I think that's really important. And now more than ever, you know, going back to schools in these next few weeks, as schools are opening up more widely, we really do need to think about what do these children need right now, and almost take them out of the system and say, well, where are they now? Not where should they be, because we think they should be at this arbitrary point in reception or in nursery, but where are they now, and how can we support them to be comfortable and to be ready for whatever life is going to throw at us in the next few weeks?
Yeah, and that's an interesting one, because as educators, we want to measure against something, don't we? And
all the time.
Let's stop measuring and really just focus on, like you've just said, what does the child actually need?
It's really hard, actually, you know, and as an advisor, I have to ask those questions about how many children are on track, and it is really tricky to get that balance. And I'm not saying that we don't have to have an eye on the end goal. We absolutely do. But it's difficult not to get skewed.
I think what's important for me is that those things don't matter at the moment. It's about that transition for the child back into the setting, which is probably more important, maybe.
Absolutely. Until children are confident and comfortable to be back where they are, you can be the best teacher in the world. It's not going to make any difference to those children if they're not in the right place. So I think that has to be at the heart of what we're doing right now, is just getting children so that they actually want to be coming to settings, that they're comfortable and, you know, ready to be, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very powerful. And it's lovely to hear that it's about putting children at the centre. And yeah, but sometimes I agree, it's hard. You get sidetracked,
There's a lot of demands on teachers, on leaders. You know, you're meeting the needs of the children, but also the families, your senior leaders, your advisors, Ofsted, the local authority, all these different people placing demands on you. And it can get, you know, the child can get lost in that if you're not careful. So I think it's always got to come back to the child is at the heart of what we do, because actually, if it weren't for the children, we wouldn't be here.
No, I agree. So that leads us into question three then, Ruth. So if you could give two pieces of advice to educators in the early years or primary education, what would they be?
I really struggle to split this into two things because I think they're interlinked. But I think what I always say whenever I'm working with people is know what your why is, know what your core purpose is. What do you want for your children? Because if you've got a really good, clear handle on that, when things get difficult, you can always ask yourself, okay, is this serving what I want for my children? Is it supporting my vision? And if you're really, really clear on that and you know what that purpose is and you share that with everyone you work with, it's much, much easier when things are tough to say, okay, let's look at this through the lens of our vision. Is this getting us where we need to be? And I think that's quite powerful. And then I think that also comes from being really well informed. So I think it's very, very easy to get swayed by the latest fad. And, you know, I'm all for looking at research. I like to be research informed, but I also look at it through the lens of let's be a bit critical about the research. Let's ask questions. Who's doing the research? How was that done? How reliable is it? Is it replicable? You know, is it a good, strong piece of research, or is it, you know, the latest thing that, you know, in 10 years time, we'll all be laughing a little bit like a lot of people do now with brain gym, where they say, I can't believe we did that. You know, so I think, you have to be a bit careful and a bit selective, but I think being well-read and well-informed, because in early years in particular, your pedagogy will be questioned all the time. And so you have to know why you're doing what you do, which kind of comes back to that vision again. You know, I do it this way because, and this is why I know I do it this way, you know, and that's about a balance as well between knowing what works for you and your class as a practitioner, but also knowing that it's backed up in research and that's the best thing for the children.
I think the other thing there as well, though, is about being proud of being an early years teacher, you know.
Absolutely.
An early years practitioner. And you know, people don't necessarily are going to come to you. So it's about you being the force and showing the fantastic stuff that you're doing within your setting to a primary school.
Yeah, I think you can be very much, I mean, for the first, I'm just thinking, I think the first four schools that I worked in, I was the early years person.
Yes.
You know, they were either single form entry or some were even smaller. I once worked in a tiny two-class primary school, so I had the infants. And so in some ways that's really liberating because you get to make a lot of the decisions about how it runs. But in other ways, that can be quite a lonely place. And then you also have people in, particularly people in upper key stage two, who often don't understand what it is you do. And so you almost have to go out there and say to them, come and have a look at what we do in early years, because, you know, you need to know where these children start out. And I think what I've worked really, really hard to do is to get people to do that and say, come and look at this fab practice. You know, don't be afraid. Don't come down with a clipboard and judge me. Come down and have a look and just spend an afternoon with us and see what it is we do. And I'll explain it to you. I'll talk you through it. And there's nothing to be scared of. Because I think some of that comes from a place of people are scared of, they don't quite understand what happens. And so it's a little bit frightening.
It did make me laugh this week, Ruth, because obviously all schools are starting to go back and, you know, we schools are using the word bubbles, you know, so it's been really interesting on social media because, and I did have to chuckle, you know, you've got year six teachers having to go down to support, you know, or year five teachers, year four teachers, miraculously putting onto social media, oh gosh, I've got to go and have a foundation stage bubble. What do I do? You know, it's quite interesting because, you know, I remember being, you know, in a class on my own, you know, I was in a building separate from the main building.
Yeah.
Nobody ever came and seen me, but, you know, they used to, and when they did come in, they used to just look so scared, you know, but it's actually a fun place to be, isn't it, Ruth? It's actually
quite
a,
you know, I think Yeah, if we can remove some of the mystery around it. And, you know, it's probably a controversial thing to say, but I do think some people in early years like that mystery. Yes. They like to be, you know, like you say, if nobody comes down there, there's that sort of feeling that you're getting on and doing your thing, and that's fine. And yes. I do think there's got to be more space for opening the doors and saying, come and see what we do. I do think, I mean, I worked in Key Stage 2 for a while in that tiny school, and I do think it was much, much easier for me to go into Key Stage 2 because I knew what I was building on than it probably is for somebody to come and work in Foundation and Key Stage 1. I think everyone should do it. I think everybody, you know, ideally should work at least in each key stage, because we need to know what we're working towards as well. And I often use the hashtag respect for EYFS, but I actually think we need to have a lot more cross-sector respect, you know, and a lot more cross-sector conversations that aren't just arguments. They are proper discussions about pedagogy.
Yeah, no, that's really powerful. Obviously, I've already talked about, you know, your support over the past 10 weeks, which has been immense. But you've been this is question number 4, by the way. So you've been a really good positive force over the time of COVID-19. So what made you set up the virtual staff room? And did you ever imagine it would have been so popular as to what it is now?
I didn't imagine I'd still be doing it. 11 weeks in, I think we're into our 57, I think it was 58 today.
Right.
What I saw when all this happened, first of all, I could see lockdown might be coming, and I started to think about, right, okay, so how does that work for me as somebody goes into other people's schools? You know, I can't do that anymore. So I am usually very, very, very busy. So all of a sudden I find myself at a loose end and think, well, what can I do to help? That was the thing. And I could see lots of things popping up around practical support and guidance of, you know, how to manage the lockdown, how to support families. And I was involved in a lot of that as well. But what I noticed was that there wasn't really anything social. So people were using Twitter in a social way, but that's quite a limited technology for socialising in some ways. And I just thought, actually, for some people, work is where they socialise. You know, if you're at home on your own and you suddenly find yourself shielding, or, you know, you can't go into work because of the lockdown, and that is where you do your socialising, then that's all gone. So I decided, I thought, well, why don't we just try a virtual staff room and see what happens? And the idea was very much that it should be just like the staff room, in that you can wander in and out at any point. You know, you don't have to book to come. You don't have to stay for the whole time. You can eat your lunch, and I know you do that quite often, Aaron. And that you can also veer between some really serious discussions and complete nutter nonsense, sometimes in the space of 5 minutes. I thought, well, we'll give it a whirl, and here we are. And yeah, we've had people from all over the world, and it's definitely broadened my networks. I think at first a lot of people saying, is it an early years thing? And so I wrote a blog about it to say, no, it's not an early years thing. It is very much a social thing, and you can come whoever you are and you will be welcomed. And I'm really pleased to say that everybody who's come has said that they felt really welcomed and they've enjoyed it. So that's brilliant. It's fab. I'm going to miss it when I eventually have to stop.
I just love the fact that every time I come, obviously I get told off because I normally say something naughty. But yeah, I think for me, you know, I was a bit sceptical at first because obviously I work in a university, so we don't really have a staff room like I used to do when I was teaching. But it's not just about that, is it? You had early years practitioners, you had FE teachers, you know, it was just so powerful and we were all saying the same thing.
Yeah, lots of, and actually, you know, not necessarily people that you always find yourself agreeing with. And I think you'll agree that we've had some quite robust debates in there in a very friendly way. But there's been some quite serious discussion and we've explored ideas. And I think I noticed in the last 3 weeks a real change in that people have been using it a lot more for support in preparation for opening up. So that the social aspect of it changed slightly, because that's what was needed. And I think that was lovely to see, actually, that people came to it as a space that they felt they could come in and say, I'm really worried about this, or this is a bit scary, or what does everybody think about this? Is what I'm planning to do. What are your thoughts? And it wasn't a place where you would be judged. It would just be, how can we help each other?
Well, it was a safe space, wasn't it, Ruth? It was very much a safe space. And I mean, what really kind of opened it up for me was your international people who are from USA. I just couldn't believe that, you know, we had people, teachers, educators from across the world. It was...
That was a bit of a surprise, and that, you know, some people actually getting up, sort of setting the alarm early because they're 5 hours behind us, so they can get up in the early hours to come and join staff room, which I think, you know, that's, I never, if you told me 11 weeks ago that that's what we would be doing, I would have laughed at you. But it obviously means something, and I've been really touched by the number of people who have been in touch and said, it's been an absolute lifeline, and it's given me rhythm to my day, and it's made me feel like I'm part of something. So, yeah, I'm just blown away by its success, really.
Oh, that's brilliant. And I mean, I think it would be really, I mean, hopefully we wouldn't have to use a virtual staff room again, you know, in some aspect. But I'm wondering if there's a possibility of maybe, you know, the virtual staff room members getting together one day. And
I think that'd be fab, yeah.
Or something, you know.
It would be really nice to do an open invitation to anybody who's joined in at any point to say, you know, we're going to get together and you will be welcome to come along. And actually, you know, some of these people I do know in real life, but some of them I've never met before. And how lovely would that be for us all to get together when things are, you know, much more normal. And
I just love the fact, Ruth, that somebody's taught us how to make dandelion honey.
Yeah, you know, all sorts of stuff. Joe taught us how to make dandelion honey. We've been talking crochet today.
And it's mindfulness stuff as well, isn't it? It's stuff that it's not always about the day job. It was actually about how to look after each other as well, which I just thought was so powerful.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was trying to do, because, you know, in a real staff room, and I would say that is one of the aspects I miss about being in schools. You know, I used to always make a point of going into the staff room, even if it was just for 10 minutes at lunchtime, just to see how everybody was and have a chat. And in a real staff room, that's what you do. One minute you're talking about something really, really serious, and the next minute you're gossiping about what you saw on the TV last night, or you're having a bit of a moan about your partner or whatever it is. And that's okay. And I think, you know, in the best way you can virtually, we've kind of recreated that. I mean, it is a bit random, isn't it? Well, you know, you are all over the place, and I like that. I like the randomness of it, and the fact that on different days when different people come in, we have very different conversations.
Yeah, I think I've got to say, it's one of the best things. You know, even, you know, I'm still working just like most educators are. My day starts at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. I very rarely get off the computer until 8 p.m. on the night time, and it's non-stop. Yeah. So for me to have that staff room was an opportunity for me to actually eat and just chat. You know, it was just a really good way. And it really, you know, 1 o'clock would come, 1:15 would come, and I felt uplifted. I felt you know, I can now get on in the afternoon, and it was really, really supportive. So thank you, Ruth.
It's been a pleasure. And I think it's been great fun. I mean, I think even those of us who are at home with family, you know, I've got my husband and my kids at home, but just to have some contact with the outside world is important. You know, we are social creatures. So I think, you know, what I'd like to do ideally is when all this is over, maybe we do something once a month where we just have an hour where we all shoot the breeze and see how we're all getting on. That would be great.
Right, yeah, definitely. I definitely think that would be absolutely brilliant. And I definitely am up for a meeting. I think, imagine us lot out for a meal. It'd be fun.
Pity the poor waiter.
So that leads us on to question number 5. So you've told us a little bit about, you know, where you've come from, what you're doing at the moment, the impact that you have. So what are we going to see from you in the near future, Ruth? And is there anything exciting on the horizon that we should be aware of?
Well, I'm going to carry on with this for as long as I can. You know, while ever we're in either lockdown or while things are restricted, I'll be running staff room. When school opens again for the wider community on Monday, my husband said to me, "Are you still doing staff room?" And I said, "Yes, because There are still people out there who are at home, who are shielding. There's people like you and myself who are working from home. So that will carry on. I'm doing quite a lot of online training now for people. I'm getting requests for things around transition. People are really thinking about what next and how to make that as positive as possible. I've got some really exciting work that I'm doing with a publisher, looking at an international curriculum, which is really exciting. Oh. So getting teeth into that, it's giving me something to think about. And eventually, I will be going back into my school improvement role, hopefully in September.
Yeah.
If not October, it very much depends on when it's safe to do so. But I will be supporting schools and carrying on. I shall just, you know, I do a job that I absolutely love. I've had to learn a different way of doing it in the last 12 weeks. But I think I have found different ways to do the same thing. And for me, it's all about connections. It's all about, you know, making links with people, supporting people. That's the bit of the job I absolutely love is, you know, when people are feeling a little bit like they don't know where to go and they don't know what to do next, and just having a conversation saying, well, have you thought about this? Or here's a person who might be able to help you. So I'm just going to keep on doing that for as long as I can, really.
Is there anything that potentially we might see published from you in the next few years? Or,
well, yeah, possibly. I've been approached. I've done a lot more blogging in lockdown. I don't have the excuse now that I've not got time to write, although it has been tough to squeeze it in. But I think that's given me more confidence. People have always said to me, you should write a book, and there's always been that little nagging doubt of why would anybody want to listen to what I've got to say or read what I've got to say. So I'm starting to realise that actually people might. So I think there might be a book in the next year or so. But we shall see, Aaron, we'll see.
No, I think that's really exciting. I mean, it was the reason why I asked it was because I think the way that you come across, Ruth, and the way that you write is accessible. And I think as a practitioner, I think it's really, really important that we make sure that all of our literature can inform, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not just been written for the sake of being written, but actually you can pick it up and use it.
I want to do something that's going to be useful to people. There's absolutely no point in doing a book for the sake of doing a book. But yeah. I want my when I write my blogs, I'm always writing with, you know, what would I have wanted as a teacher? What, you know, I've only got a certain amount of time. I haven't got time to read through loads and loads and loads of stuff because I'm busy. What will help me in the classroom? So it's that mix of a bit of the theory of why this is important and then some real practical activities that you can use. So I think that will probably be the line I go down.
Fab. So that leads us on to our last question. And Ruth, I ask everybody this question, so it's one that is on there all the time. So if I could grant you 3 wishes, what would they be?
The first one would be respect for EYFS, which I mentioned before is a hashtag I do use quite a bit. I sometimes feel that people don't always give the respect that we deserve. There's almost a feeling that if you work with the youngest children, that's somehow easier or less academically challenging. But actually, you know, we were having this conversation in staff room today. You do need to understand a lot about children. You need to know a lot. So yeah. I think it would be really lovely to see. I mean, the dropping of the names that people sometimes, you know, I've been called a hysterical naysayer and an osmosis EYFS nutter, you know, and I don't think anybody else would speak about another part of the profession in the same way. So I think a dialogue going forward where we respect each other and understand that actually when we work with 3 and 4 year olds, we're not working with miniature 14, 15 year olds. We're working with children whose needs are very, very different. So we have to look at that through a different lens. Yeah. So I'd like all sectors to be treated with respect, but I think particularly the EYFS sector, and understanding that play is actually really powerful, but it's not frivolous. It's important and it's purposeful and meaningful, and that, you know, there's so much that children get out of it. And I think when I hear people dismissing it as, oh, they're just playing, I think, no, you really don't understand what's going on here and how important that is for children. So that would be sort of wish number one. Respect and some dialogue, and I think sort of a recognition of the interconnectedness of learning. I think there's a real push at the moment for very curricular, you know, subject-based curriculum. You know, it's got to be English, it's got to be maths, it's got to be history, geography. And actually, young children don't think that way. You know, you can start off with something that is, in your head, you're thinking, right, this is English-based, and all of a sudden you're doing historical stuff, you're doing art, you're doing maths, you know, and the possibilities are just wonderful. And we can almost lose that if we're not careful by people coming and saying, yes, but it's supposed to be maths. Why are they doing? But I just think, you know, let's stop thinking in silos and think like a young child and think, actually, the possibilities are endless here. Let's be creative with it.
And I think that happens, Bruce. I think what our role very much is to inform parents and carers as well.
Absolutely.
Because obviously they see, you know, through their own experiences, through media, through that kind of, you know, pressure that's put on children through education. It's important that they understand about that actually children don't all learn at the same time, and that it's okay.
It's coming back to that, those overarching principles of the EYFS, isn't it? And that uniqueness of the child, that every child is unique and learns in a different way and at a different rate. And I do, you know, one of the sort of analogies I use is, you know, it would be madness to expect all children to be 4'6" on the 20th of June in the year that they're five. And yet we do expect all children to meet early learning goals, regardless of whether they were born on the 1st of September or on the 31st of August. And yet there can be a whole year almost of age difference. And this arbitrary measure that we have, if they don't meet it, they're somehow deemed as being behind and failing. And I'd like to change that narrative. I'd like to change the discourse around deficits with children and really reflect on what is it they're bringing. So all children will bring something to a school or a setting. And instead of looking at where the gaps are, thinking about, okay, where is the child starting and how can we support them and build on that? I think just changing the way we look at children and seeing them as human beings rather than, you know, always being getting ready for the next stage would be nice. And I think the third one would be a real understanding of child development for all teachers.
Oh, I love it.
And play. And I'm not just talking about in primary school here, I'm talking about secondary level as well, because I do think that a lot of the issues that we have in primary and particularly in early years come from just a bit of a lack of understanding of how children develop. So even the simple things like understanding the physical development and how that impacts on children's needs, and that, you know, very young children have very different physical needs and very different developmental needs. You know, they're not mini teenagers. So I think if we could put something around child development into every teacher's initial teacher training, I just think it would be so beneficial. Because as I said before, I think it was much easier for me to go from foundation and key stage one up to key stage two, because I knew what I was building on. And all teachers at some point will come across children who might have left the foundation stage but might still be needing some of those foundation things. Whether they're in key stage two, three or four, there will be some children who will need that. So I think
there are actually a lot of teachers. I mean, there is a lot of talk, isn't there? You know, what they didn't teach me on my PGCE and stuff. Yep. And, you know, there is a thirst for it, actually. Teachers do want to know about those early childhood development theorists and how they... they apply, you know, to their role. And also, I've got a good friend who did a blog for me as a secondary teacher, and even she said you need to kind of understand where children are coming from to be able to help them move forward. And that's really, really important.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, what's been really good and where I found Twitter really powerful is when people have asked and genuinely asked, you know, why do you do it this way? And you can have a conversation. And, you know, so that whole conversation that I had about handwriting that blew up massively around the ossification of the bones and the development of you know, physical development and how that impacts on handwriting. Loads of secondary teachers got in touch with me and said, I had no idea about that, you know. And actually were looking at the way that their children were writing and noticing that some of the children in key stage three hadn't got the shoulder girdle strength they needed. So that's why the handwriting was pretty atrocious. Yes. And they'd been doing lots of fine motor.
That's one of your blogs, isn't it? You've mentioned about the other blog about the virtual staff room and how I might add that in if that's okay with you.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, I've done quite a lot for COVID as well recently, and how to do an enabling environment that supports children's well-being, but is also as COVID safe as we can make it. So,
well, I think those three wishes are, you know, very very pertinent and very child-centred, and I think we would all advocate for those. So thank you so much, Ruth.
Pleasure.
It obviously that leads us to the end. Is there anything else that you'd like to say or?
No, I think I've said everything that I wanted. But thank you for giving me the opportunity. I think hopefully it's these kind of conversations, you know, really help people to understand where we're coming from. And I think, you know, Twitter and Facebook are marvelous things for having short conversations, but it's the real dialogue that makes a difference. And you know, I want to get engaged in that. And not always with people we agree with. You know, let's sit down and have a discussion. And I think sometimes you find that actually you agree on a lot more than you probably realise.
I agree. Well, Ruth, thank you so much for joining us this week. And it has been an absolute pleasure to listen to you. It really, really has.
Thank you.
I know that so many people will listen to this and be able to say, do you know, yes, I can really relate to that. But from really, it's been an absolute pleasure to be part of the virtual staff room and also to listen to you this week. So thank you so much.
Thanks for asking me.
No problem. So everyone, make sure that you tune in for next week. Make sure that you're sharing Ruth's podcast and also linking to Ruth's blogs as well. Thank you so much, Ruth.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.